and welcome back to The Powerful Patient. I'm delighted to have you with us again this week. And this week we're going to talk about sleep. I know I promised you a program on eating food, but we're going to talk more about nutrition in the future. And this week there's a new report coming out from Consumer Reports about sleep. And so I thought it would be good for us to talk this week about sleep, and we will certainly talk more about food in the future. We have with us today one of the editors of this new report from Consumer Reports. Her name is Gail Williams, and she's an associate health editor at Consumer Reports. So we'll be talking with Gail shortly. Just to give you an introduction to this topic, I wanted to share with you a few of the very important reasons why we need sleep. Sometimes it feels to a lot of people like a waste of time, but it is by no means a waste of time. It is very important to our bodies to spend this time resting, recouping our forces, and frankly, doing a lot of self-repair. This is the time that the body takes to repair anything that may be going wrong and to heal itself from whatever may be going on. So no matter what the condition of your health, we all need sleep, and we need a goodly bit of it. At the very minimum, we need 6 hours, and that's if you're an efficient sleeper. If you go straight to sleep, it takes about 2 hours to get into the deepest part, the most restorative part of sleep, and about 2 hours of that restorative cycle are essential to good health, and then it takes you 2 hours to complete the cycle. So altogether, a minimum of 6 hours, preferably 8. So the recommendation is that you program into your life at least 7 to 8 hours to be devoted to sleep. And that gives you some time to go to sleep and to wake up and so forth. So what kinds of health issues are actually provoked by a loss of sleep? Because there are many things that actually are provoked by loss of sleep. One of them is that your blood pressure varies during your sleep cycle, and if your sleep is interrupted, it can negatively affect the normal variability in your blood pressure and might lead to hypertension and other cardiovascular or heart problems. So heart problems can be related to lack of sleep. Another set of research indicates that if you lose sleep, it impairs your body's ability to use insulin, which can lead to the onset of diabetes type 2. So again, you need that sleep in order to get your body back in its normal balance. And fragmented sleep can also cause you to gain weight. Yep, that's right. It can actually lower your metabolism and increase the levels of a hormone called cortisol. Increased cortisol levels can result in increased appetite and also a decrease in the body's ability to burn calories, none of which is a good thing if you're trying to lose weight. So in order to lose weight, you also need to be sure to get plenty of sleep. So be sure to program yourself for 7 to 8 hours. And what if you're having trouble falling asleep? That's what Gail Williams is going to tell us about when we come right back after these messages. Please stay with us and we'll be right back. Thank you. The Powerful Patient is brought to you as a public service by the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance. We work with people who are dealing with complex medical conditions or who may be struggling to get a diagnosis. We help you learn how to manage your health, form a partnership with your healthcare providers, and manage your healthcare team. Read about us on our website at powerfulpatient.org. You can ask for a copy of our handout there, 8 Ways You Can Help Your Doctors Save Your Life. We welcome your questions by email or by telephone at 1-800-767-4845, extension 6. Thank you. And now I'm very pleased to welcome Gail Williams, who is the Deputy Health Editor for Consumer Reports. Gail, would you please tell us about the article that's appearing in your September issue?
We have done a piece that is in our September issue. It's about sleep. We actually surveyed about 1,400, nearly 1,500 adults to ask them about their sleeping patterns. And what we found is that a lot of people are not sleeping well, many more than people might think, although maybe that's not true. I mean, maybe so many people aren't sleeping well that this may not be news to quite a few people.
Right, nearly half of the people that you talked with said that mm-hmm. they had a problem sleeping.
Exactly. We asked people a series of questions about whether they had problems last night, within the past week, within the past month, because we wanted to make it as comprehensive as possible. Mm-hmm. And basically what we found was in the past month, 44% said they had problems sleeping on at least eight nights within the month. So that makes them problem sleepers. We also found overall that a lot of people are taking sleep drugs to help combat their insomnia, and people are also taking sometimes other drugs that make them sleep but aren't marketed as sleep drugs. We also tried to come up with some solutions, so we had some of our employees test sound machines and found that those can be a good alternative, good drug-free alternative to
right.
To help you go to sleep. Those worked well, and I think a lot of people who had trouble sleeping had not tried them before and tried them and were really impressed with them.
That's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the drugs for a minute, because it's very concerning to me that something like as many as 70 million Americans may be affected by drug-related problems related to sleep.
Right. It's really a big, big problem. People seem to take a lot of sleep drugs. A lot of people seem to turn to sleep drugs quickly. If they have a problem, they go see their doctor, and perhaps they say they're having trouble sleeping, and all of a sudden they have a prescription to a sleep drug. And what we also found is some people tend to take them for a long time.
Well, and they may not just be asking their doctor. They may be asking a friend or
True.
Listening to the television.
Absolutely.
And then asking their doctor for a prescription for drug X.
Direct-to-consumer ads, yes. Well, certainly, we've all seen the Lunesta ad with the Lunar Moth and Ambien and, Rosarum, all these different things. I think people are probably more familiar with the names of some of these drugs than they are with the conditions that they treat. So yes, they see something and they see a commercial and they see somebody waking up looking refreshed and happy, and they think, well, I want that to be me. So you're absolutely right. Then they go to their doctor and may ask for that when, maybe they could change their sleep pattern, or there are a number of different things you can do without drugs to try to help yourself.
So for more than 20 years of my career, I've spent a lot of time on the road, like at least 30% of the time on the road. And I remember at one point saying to somebody that I was having trouble falling asleep in a random hotel, and somebody said, oh, you should take a Valium, and actually handed me some.
Wow.
This is an interesting way to get a medication. And I tried actually taking a half a Valium to try to just take the edge off and get me to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered was that I was more tired during the day. It seemed to interrupt my REM sleep, according to the little bit of research I did on it.
That can certainly happen.
And I found I had just as much help from one aspirin as I did from half a Valium. And I was actually more awake during the day.
Wow. That is the problem that people have complained about, that they do feel tired the next day, that they do feel drowsy. In fact, some of the other sleep ads, you may see some of the commercials say that's one of the things that some of them promote, is that, and you won't feel tired the next day, because that is a real problem.
There are people who need to take sleep medications, and so I'm not saying that they're a bad thing, but not the numbers of people who are in fact taking them. And I think we need to be somewhat wary of the commercial advertising that goes directly to the consumers on the television set. They're able to speak at one at one moment with millions of people. And of course, they don't know who's sitting in front of the television set, so they don't really know whether you need this medication or not. But everybody has trouble falling asleep from time to time, and that does not necessarily mean that you need medication. So we will talk about that some more. But I wanted to read you just a small excerpt here from Dr. Jerome Groopman's book, How Doctors Think. I'm on page 210. What he's saying here is that we need to be wary that drug companies are taking natural processes and turning them into a medical disorder. Here he happens to be talking about a normal part of the aging process that's being suddenly seen as a medical condition. In this instance, some drug companies are meaning to turn the natural aging process into a medical disorder. In other settings, aspects of personality and temperament that deviate from a narrow norm are being labeled as psychological illnesses requiring medication. Of course, there are children and adults with disabling anxiety that cripples their ability to form friendships, but some people who are simply very shy are labeled with social affective disorder and given powerful psychotropic drugs. Others who work with extraordinary intensity and precision, who are reluctant to unhinge from a task and worried that they're overlooking an error, are too quickly given the diagnosis of obsessive compulsive disorder and are given medication. So we really need to be careful of that. And so you see something on the television that sounds attractive, you want to have that little lunar moth in your life as well, and you go to your doctor and say, hey, could you please prescribe some Lunesta for me? And here's another quote from Dr. Groopman, who is himself quoting Dr. Watson, who he was interviewing at the time, and he says Dr. Watson told him, quote, some doctors frankly are weak-willed wimps. So when a guy comes in and says he has a pain in his knee and the doctor is scared that the guy is going to go down the road to another doctor if they don't give him something, they write a prescription and you can fill in the blank for whatever is the latest drug that's been advertised. Other doctors say to themselves, well, if the patient wants this drug, I might have prescribed something else, but it really doesn't make much difference, so I'll give him the one he wants. So here we have a sort of public-driven arena where you see real marketing, the effort by certain pharmaceutical companies to create demand for products that don't merit it based on medical need. So this is Joyce again, and what I'm saying is that you really need to be wary of walking in and telling your doctor that you need a particular prescription. Your problem may be completely other than the one that you have assumed that it is. That's number one. You do need the doctor to help analyze the problem, and if you walk in by stating the solution, you may shortcut his analysis. So you want the doctor to apply his analytical thinking and not just whip out that prescription pad. So see if you can phrase it in a different way. I'm having trouble sleeping. And give the doctor some analysis of that. How often does it happen? How severe is it? Maybe keep a little journal of your issues with sleep. And also talk in your journal about things that are going on. Are there things that are worrying you, keeping you up at night, that maybe you need to focus on before you reach for a pill bottle? Let's take a little break now, and we'll be right back to speak some more with Gail Williams about the astounding rate of side effects from sleep-related medications. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thanks.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
We're back now speaking with Gail Williams, the Deputy Health Editor for Consumer Reports.
According to your study, something like 63% of people who take sleep medications had side effects.
Yes.
Including dependency.
Including dependency, which is, you know, a really bad one. And sometimes there's something called rebound insomnia when the sleeplessness comes back. And sometimes there's problems with memory. But I think the most common side effect we found was daytime drowsiness.
Right. One of the scariest things that's been reported, and this is evidently amongst the movie stars out in L.A. who started taking Ambien, is sleepwalking or sleep eating. You wake up and you realize you're standing in front of the refrigerator.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Or the worst is sleep driving.
Sleep driving, yes. And those are terrible, terrible things. In our survey, we found, I think it was about 7% of the people who took a sleeping pill that previous months did report those kind of dangerous habits. And that's, I can't even imagine waking up and you're behind the wheel. You know, that's terrifying, dangerous, not only to you but to other people on the road. It's just from, you know, from a sleep medication.
Goodness gracious.
You may remember that in 2006, Representative Patrick Kennedy crashed his car into a barrier in Washington, D.C., and he was found at that point to be sleep driving. He still has no memory of the event at all. He had taken Ambien, and he had also taken another medication that was an anti-nausea medication, but that had some narcotic properties. It would make you drowsy. So the combination of the two in particular was extremely bad. A year later, in 2007, the FDA recommended putting A year later in 2007, the FDA put a requirement upon manufacturers of all 13 sleep drugs, warning people against taking them with alcohol or other drugs. And I've mentioned Ambien a couple of times. That's by no means the only one. The drugs in question are Ambien, butisol sodium, carbitrol, Dalmane, Doral, Halcyon, Lunesta, Placidil, Prosom, Restoril, Resorum, Secanol, and Sonata. So all of those drugs can be bad, particularly when misused, overused, or taken in combination with other drugs. Many of the cases now of sleep driving have been analyzed, and they found that in most of the cases, people took more of the medication than was recommended, or took it with alcohol or some other drug that also had a sedative property that makes you feel drowsy. So be very, very careful to take, if you are taking medications, to take them only as directed. And when they say don't take it with alcohol, this is why it can have very scary consequences. So don't take it with alcohol and don't take it with anything else that might cause you to be drowsy. In addition to these, quote, bizarre sleep-related behaviors, unquote, these drugs can also cause life-threatening allergic reactions, and that allergic reaction might occur the first time you take the drug or at any subsequent event when you take the drug. So again, be very careful. If it's making you feel strange, you need to report this to your doctor immediately.
So we should not reach immediately for sleep medications. There are better ways to deal with that.
There are certainly other ways. You know, it's not, some people really do need sleep medications, and those people should definitely take them if they, you know, but there, before you reach for the bottle, there, you know, the pill bottle, there may be something else you can try.
Well, one of the things we talked about was your basic comfort, and you know, maybe you're on the wrong mattress. You know, if you've been on the same mattress for more than, what,
eight years
or something like that, then you probably need a new mattress. Mattresses do not last forever.
That's right.
And some of them have 10-year warranties. Some of them say they have 20-year warranties, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen for you.
Right.
So
it may stop
really
to be comfortable for you.
To examine, are you comfortable at night, or can you just not get into a good position?
Right.
One of the things I realized was, especially as I went through menopause, I became very sensitive to things that weren't natural fibers. My skin didn't breathe right, you know, I get the night sweats or something like that, and I found I did much better in cotton sheets and cotton blankets, and sometimes you go to a hotel and it's this polyester blanket
yes.
and there's nothing else, and what are you going to do? I've been known to take the whole bed apart and remake it. But the other thing I did for a long time was I traveled with a comforter, a down comforter that was made for travel, and I just poked around on the internet to see if they're still available, and they are from several places. It's basically just a very thin but down comforter, and so it's got all those natural fibers next to you, and it really helps. Sometimes I put it over me, sometimes I put it under me, just to make myself comfortable, because that's the first step. If you're not comfortable, you're not going to fall asleep.
Comfort is very, very important. You're absolutely right. If you're not comfortable, you're not going to go to sleep, and so, you know, that you need to be comfortable. You don't necessarily need to reach for some medicine,
right.
You know. So, yes, absolutely. And yes, we do recommend if you haven't replaced it in about 8 years, it might be time to do that.
Right. So it could be traffic noise. It could be the noise of something else in your environment.
Oh, sure.
I read something that the light on your alarm clock should be red and not green or something like that.
Really?
Do you know about those?
No, we, but I will tell you that one of the sound machines that we tested had a lot of lights, soft lights, but still had a lot of different lights. I believe it was the Brookstone model, which actually our panelists liked best, but one of the things they mentioned was that there are several, like there's different choices on it, and each choice kind of lights up, a very soft light, but if you're used to a room with, or need a room with no light, that could be a little distracting. So, you know, I don't know much about the green versus the red, but I know there are, you know, for some people, they really need complete darkness in the room.
Right.
You know, any little light from a clock or, you know, there's actually in my bedroom, the cable box, there's a clock on it, and it's green numbers, and it's very bright. It doesn't really bother me, but, you know, I could see for someone who's having difficulty sleeping, that could be a real problem.
Sometimes there's a way to turn the brightness down, but if there isn't, you can always, like, point it to the wall.
Yes, right, which I would imagine some people, on this particular box, there isn't a dimness switch on it, so I can imagine some people getting up and unplugging it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. That's interesting. So what were some of the other things that people were using to help themselves sleep? You said some people try exercise. Does exercise help you sleep, or
we don't want to exercise too close to bedtime, because that can have the opposite effect on some people too. They get kind of revved up before. But you, some other things you can do following a particular schedule. I mean, that sounds very simple, but you'd be surprised how many people don't follow a particular schedule. You know, one night they go to bed at 9, the next night they go to bed at midnight, and something as simple as sort of sticking to a general bedtime could help you with going to sleep. And one of the things that we do, because we're such a 24/7 world now, we have so much going on in the bedroom. We have TVs, we have computers, we have, you know, iPods, we have all these different things, and sometimes you need to just have peacefulness in the place where you're sleeping. Maybe you shouldn't watch TV if you're having trouble sleeping. Perhaps you shouldn't bring the laptop into bed and check email if that's where you're going to be sleeping. You really want the bedroom area to be a place where, if you're having difficulty, you want to make it as peaceful and as calm as possible. That's not the place necessarily where you want to bring in your work.
Right. So your bedroom should be oriented toward sleep.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Not just another extension to your study.
Right. Because, you know, all that kind of mental stimulation makes people want to stay up and stay awake. And you know, no wonder that they can't go to sleep if they have all the toys on the, you know, night table next to them.
Right.
We also looked at cognitive behavioral therapy, just basically focusing on positive behaviors that can help you sleep better, you know, just sort of talking to yourself and just modeling good behavior so that you can focus on positives that will make you go to sleep, not focusing on I can't sleep, but I am going to sleep, and sort of doing that, those kind of positive affirmations to make yourself go to sleep.
One of the things I notice about myself is the more I worry about the fact that I'm not sleeping, the less likely it is I'm going to sleep.
Worry is one big cause of insomnia. A lot of people do, you know, that's the time when they're quiet, so that's the time that they're thinking, and as they're thinking, their thoughts just spiral, and yes, that can keep you up.
Right. So if I'm lying there going, look, you got to go to sleep, you have an 8 o'clock meeting, that's a recipe for disaster. But if I just say, look, you know, I'm just going to relax here, and if I sleep, I sleep, and if I don't, I don't.
Right.
Then I'll actually sleep more than I realize.
You probably will. You know, we actually had a sidebar along with this story that talked about 9 myths about sleep, and one of them, people believe that the main cause of sleep, the main cause of insomnia, is worry, and certainly worry and stress can, you know, cause someone to stay awake. But what we found generally, and what science has found, is that it's a number of things that keep people up, not just worry. It could be depression, anxiety, and actual pains, you know, actual maladies such as asthma, arthritis, or other things associated with pain. That probably keeps people up. As well, you know, it's not only worry. It's not the main cause. There could be a whole bunch of medical conditions and other issues that make people not be able to go to sleep.
Right. You list a number of health issues here, and I notice of the problem sleepers, 65% of them suffered from some sort of physical pain. 38% of them suffered from a respiratory condition like asthma. Or a cold. Mm-hmm. And 50% of them suffered from mood disorders. Now, that adds up to about 150%. So, in other words, an awful lot of those people have more than one of them.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's not just, unfortunately, the people who have asthma may also have arthritis or, you know, a mood disorder or something. Yes. It overlaps. It doesn't have to be just one, unfortunately.
And some of the pain meds will make you drowsy naturally. So in some cases, people may be utilizing a little bit more pain meds to cause them to be drowsy.
Exactly. Some people take pain meds as well as anti-anxiety medications to make them go to sleep.
Right. So what, for example, did you find about things like meditation, people doing meditation or reading before they go to bed, something to try to help calm the mind?
Well, that was one of our, you know, certainly among our recommendations is to have a calm environment. There are different things you can do. We didn't necessarily recommend those particular things, but certainly anything that produces a calming environment, anything that makes you calm is something that would be good for inducing sleep.
Mm-hmm. Some things I've tried is like playing a tape of classical guitar music or something like that. Or what is it? Some of the old classical musics, I'm trying to remember, are supposed to be particularly good for helping you nod off.
I guess that's where lullabies come from.
That's right. But again, it's primarily how can you de-stress yourself? How can you get your mind to let go of all those nagging problems that it's chewing on? Otherwise, it's just going to keep gnarling on them and keep you awake. And so somehow you've got to get your brain to let go.
Yes. And, you know, I think just trying to just detach ourselves, you know, we're always so engaged. You know, if we're not reading, we're on the computer, or we're listening to something on the radio, or we're on the telephone, or watching TV. And some, you know, at some point, you really do have to disengage for the night. And it's really a conscious decision of saying, I'm going to turn off all the appliances, toys, whatever it is, and I'm going to focus and go to sleep. But you know, that's very difficult now with all the different things that we have going on. For some people, it is very hard to say, I'm going to bed. I mean, a lot of people don't even go to bed anymore. They fall asleep, you know, and sometimes
in the chair or something.
Right. And you know, they may not be ready for bed, but they're falling asleep because they're tired, but they're not necessarily getting themselves prepared to go to sleep for the evening.
Right, and our bodies really do have a built-in diurnal cycle, you know, where you're supposed to do things more or less, it used to be according to the sun.
You
know, when the sun goes to bed, you're supposed to go to bed. You
right.
know, the lights went out in the days before electricity.
That's right.
So, you know, we're kind of geared up for doing that. But we've completely disrupted all those cycles with our watching the midnight television show or working different eight-hour shifts during the week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you work day, sometimes you work night, and those are very difficult for us to deal with.
You know, I often say to, I have two young children, and I often say to my husband, I love the days when we were kids when TV actually went off for the night.
You know? Yes, that's right. Signed off.
Yeah, because my
kids played the national anthem.
Exactly. And TV was over for the day, and
that's
was
right.
it. And if you know, for some reason you couldn't sleep, okay, you have to find something else to do now because the TV station is finished. And, you know, now my kids would watch Nickelodeon all night if we let them. And, it, you know, sometimes I wake up and when I, you know, can't sleep or have difficulty sleeping, I turn on the TV and, what is SpongeBob SquarePants doing on at 3 o'clock in the morning?
You know? No, it shouldn't be on.
It really shouldn't. It really
shouldn't. To cool it. But yeah, I mean, people have talked about television as a way of disrupting your sex life, too. I mean, you really need to turn the television off and do bed-related things and have a good time.
Let's have a quick word from our sponsor, the VHL Family Alliance, and Keith Richards, and we will be back in just a moment to speak some more with Gail Williams about sleep.
This is Keith Richards, aka Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine, but it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Gail Williams, the Deputy Health Editor from Consumer Reports, about her latest report on sleep and sleep-related appliances.
Let's talk a little bit about the 9 myths of sleep. These are very interesting.
Sure.
Number one, getting 1 hour less sleep per night than you really need won't really affect you.
It'll leave you a little bit, you know, more tired, but it won't... It will affect you. I mean, saying that the myth is that it won't do very much. You will feel tired, but you're not going to think as quickly. You're not going to respond to things as quickly, and it could affect your heart health down the road because you're just not getting the sleep. You're not balancing what you need to balance for the day. You know, you're awake for
right.
so many hours. You're supposed to be asleep for so many hours, and if you don't do that in balance, other things are going to be out of balance. You also aren't as able to fight infections. I know that firsthand. If I don't sleep well, I will get an immediate cold.
Mm-hmm.
Really, if it goes on for too long, absolutely. No matter what time of year it is, I definitely will.
Right. There's a lot of new research now that shows that we really need at least 7 hours a night, preferably 8, and that's the time that our bodies do their repair work.
Right.
You know, you go to sleep and the body goes to work repairing itself. Whatever damage was done during the day, it takes care of. And part of that is keeping your immune system working at peak performance
mm-hmm.
so that anything, any infection or potential little cancer thing will get quashed by your body's own defenses.
Right.
Right. Oh, here's another myth. Your body quickly adjusts to different sleep schedules.
It takes some time. We think that, you know, if suddenly we were to change jobs or something, that, you know, suddenly you work a night shift when you normally work a day, I think some people feel like, well, you know, a couple of days I'll be off, and then I'll be able to adjust to this whole flip-flop shift. But, you know, you can basically, our internal clock is pretty much set. You can change it by a few hours a day, but it takes quite some time, probably a week or longer, to really adjust and really change your clock and change your sleep schedule. So if you, for some reason, say you're working days and your schedule changes and suddenly you're working nights, give yourself time to, you know, to really switch to that schedule.
Right.
It's not, you're not going to be totally flipped over in a week, you know, or
that's
two.
Right.
If it takes, it may take longer. Same thing when you're traveling in different time zones. You know, I think when people travel, they keep in mind that, okay, I'm going to a different time zone, but when they come back, they want to snap back to where they were.
Right.
It's going to take some time, and be patient with yourself with that, and allow yourself time to really adjust. It's not, you know, a quick overnight 24-hour kind of thing.
Right. And I'm a bit of an expert in jet lag in that sometimes I would work Monday in California, Wednesday in the East Coast, and Friday in Dusseldorf, Germany. So when you do that very much, you really have to keep in mind that we were really engineered to go by horse. You know,
mm-hmm.
So we can go one time zone a day, and it will adjust pretty rapidly. But when we skip over 3 or 6 or 12 time zones,
right,
we really have to give our bodies time to readjust to that. So, and time is really the best way to deal with it. One of my favorite ways to go to Europe is to leave Friday night,
mm-hmm.
go there, spend the weekend playing, you know, go tour London until I feel like if you don't lie down right now, you're going to fall down, right? Then take a nap, get up, and stay up until 11 o'clock at night. And then, you know, little bit by little bit, I'll adjust.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't expect our bodies to just snap to it. And
no.
The same thing with different work cycles. You're not going to snap to it immediately.
Exactly.
And then you're not going to think as sharply. I think that's the problem, even with the doctor training, you know, that they go through 36 hours on, 36 hours
right.
off.
Right.
It's a little scary because they're realizing that they're not as sharp as they think they are.
Hour 35, you can't be as sharp. You
no.
know, you just can't.
Right.
So.
Here's another myth. You need less sleep as you age.
That is a myth that people think that older people just don't need as much sleep, and they do. They need as much sleep as everyone else, but they sometimes don't get as much because of aches, pains, conditions that sort of prevent them from sleeping well. And they also older people tend to spend less time in the deep sleep, where we get, you know, the most deep rest. But that's not to say that older people don't need as much sleep. They absolutely do.
Mm-hmm. And did you talk at all about the fact that as we age, sometimes people need to get up in the middle of the night once or more to go pee?
Hmm. That's something that happens as we age. We didn't. That wasn't something that we had necessarily asked, but yes, that is something that does happen.
Right, and if you do, you just go back to
go back to sleep.
Go
hopefully.
Back to sleep, hopefully.
Yeah, you know,
don't
get up and turn on the TV, you know,
right.
you know trying right. to just settle back in and try to go right back to sleep if you can.
Okay, here's another myth. Extra sleep can prevent daytime fatigue.
Well, it's not just the amount of sleep that you're doing, but it's the type of sleep that you're getting, the deep sleep. You want to make sure you're getting good quality sleep. So just to lay around in bed and, you know, for a number of hours may not be the best thing. You want to make sure you're getting that deep REM sleep where you're, you know, you're really, really resting yourself. So it's, you know, it's not just in the number of hours that you're spending asleep. It's the kind of sleep that you're getting.
Right. And here's a common one. This is a myth. You can make up for sleep loss by sleeping more on the weekend. So you can go on 4 or 5 hours during the week, and then if you sleep in on Saturday, it'll be all right?
No. that doesn't work. You really need, your body doesn't say, okay, I know Sunday's coming, so I'll just keep going because Sunday's coming and you'll catch up, so I'll just keep going. Your body doesn't work that way. Your body needs to sleep when it needs to sleep, and that's on a consistent basis. It doesn't say, you know, it's not like a bank where it says, okay, take out because you're going to make a big deposit on Sunday. Doesn't work that way. Don't do it.
Right, so you can't pay yourself back for sleep.
No,
You should really try to do this on a regular basis.
You really should. Of course, there are going to be some times when, for whatever reason, you're not going to be able to sleep, you know, as much, perhaps, during
right.
the week. And you may sleep some more on Saturday or Sunday because you may not have to get up early or something like that. And it's okay to do that, but you don't count on that. You know, don't not sleep during the week because you know you're going to make it up on Saturday or Sunday. That may just happen naturally. Maybe you're more tired, but don't count on that as replacing the sleep.
Right, right. Here's another myth. Naps are a waste of time.
Naps can be good. Some people say they're refreshing. For me, they're not, but some people say that they are. But that's not a substitute for real sleep. You also don't want to nap late in the day because that can mess up your real sleep at night. So it's you know, some people say that they get a little 20-minute power nap and they feel great. And if that works for you, that's wonderful. But that doesn't mean that you stay up all night because you had the 20-minute power nap at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. And sometimes people with a health condition, or pregnant women, for example,
yes,
need
mm-hmm.
a nap in the
right.
daytime. But to try to do it before 3 p.m., because if you do it later, then you may interrupt
it's
your nighttime.
Right. It could interfere with your sleep. And, you know, I know sometimes people nap after they come home from work, which I, you know, couldn't possibly do that. But
right.
some people do, but I would imagine that that would, you know, mean that they're going to sleep much later in the evening because they've napped later in the day.
Right, right. Here's a myth. Snoring is normal.
It is common, and it's something that, you know, we do. Some people do, some people don't. But you want to check it if it becomes exceptionally loud, or you're doing it regularly, or you're sleepy during the day, because you may not be getting the proper, you may not be breathing properly at night and getting the rest that you need. And it could be a precursor to some other diseases such as heart disease and type 2 diabetes. It also can be a sign of sleep apnea, which is a really serious condition where your breathing stops while you're sleeping. So, you know, general snoring is probably okay, but you do want to watch it if it becomes a regular habit, or if it becomes very loud, or if you're really tired during the day after, you know, you've been told that you were snoring at night.
Right. So sometimes snoring is more of a problem for your partner than it is for you.
True, true.
Right.
But if it starts to really become a problem for the partner, it could be a problem for you too.
Right. So if your partner is ready to kick you out and put you on the sofa for the night or something, then don't just get offended. Take it
right.
as a sign that maybe you need to see a nose and throat.
Your nose
specialist.
Or your general doctor, because, you know,
right.
it can lead to so many other things, including high blood pressure,
right.
cardiovascular disease, memory problems, gaining some weight. You know, sleep apnea is linked to a number of different things. So,
right.
you know.
It can also be a deviated septum. So,
yes.
you know, checking for things like that mm-hmm. that are relatively easily corrected
mm-hmm.
would be good. And then, as you say, it could be sleep apnea. So if it's loud snoring and a particularly persistent problem, you might want to ask your doctor about getting screened for sleep apnea.
Right.
Right. One more myth. Children who don't get enough sleep will show signs of sleepiness during the day.
Just the opposite. A lot of kids, when they don't get enough sleep, they're not necessarily sluggish. They could be. They're probably more likely to be more revved up and behave badly and have difficulty paying attention to things. So, you know, it's not. You could see a child who's sleepy. You know, that could happen. But probably more likely they're going to be just the opposite. You know, so children need to get their sleep as well.
Right. I can't help thinking that that's probably true of adults, too, because people who are sleep deprived tend to have shorter fuses.
True.
And be a little bit more caustic. So, you know, be very wary of that, because your own interpersonal reactions are probably going to suffer maybe more than you realize, but the people around you will certainly realize.
Very true.
Yeah. Here's the last one you have listed here is the main cause of insomnia is worry. What's the reality on that?
Well, that worry is, as we said before, is, you know, that is one of the factors, but it's probably not the main cause of insomnia. People are having a number of different things that could cause insomnia, including medication reactions, anxiety, depression, or actual pains, aches and pains, or conditions such as asthma. Those things can cause insomnia as well. It's not just worry. It could be something else. So, you know, you have to look at your overall health as well. Don't just slough it off to, you know, I'm worried about something and that's all there is. You know, it really could be something else.
We'll be right back to speak a little bit more with Gail. I just wanted to remind you to please be sure to go to powerfulpatient.org and pick up the handout that goes with this show. And also be sure to ask for your copy of 8 Ways to Help Your Doctor Save Your Life. And of course, we would very much appreciate your support of this program. Please donate whatever you can to the VHL Family Alliance. We fund cancer research. We engage in a number of educational projects, of which this radio program is one. But we also work hard to help all families with VHL learn how to manage their health and stay well, even though there is no cure for VHL. All we can do in the meantime is to work together to find ways to make our health better, to stay as well as we can for as long as we can, while we are hoping that the researchers will find a cure for us. But realistically, a cure is still at least 20 years away. And so meanwhile, there are a lot of people dealing with a lot of tumors. And we are working hard on it, but it's not an easy thing to manage. So you know, as we all do, those of us with complex medical conditions, that there are many ways that we can work at staying healthy, and that's what this program's all about. So please, we appreciate your working with us toward that goal and managing your health too. We're speaking with Gail Williams, the deputy health editor for Consumer Report, about her new study on sleep.
Right. So certainly, to keep you from dropping off to sleep, the fact that your brain is still engaged on some quest is going to be a big factor, and somehow you need to get your brain to just cool it and decide it's sleep time. And I'll read for 20 minutes, and sometimes I fall asleep even with a light on, but that's okay. I can feel myself disengaging, or to play a tape, or anything that you find relaxing.
Right.
But try not to reach for a medicine bottle, because medicines, in fact, as you say, can have some sort of kickback effect. 65% of the people who took these medications had side effects, some negative reaction to taking these sleep medications. So this is a very serious message here. And the fact that they're advertising it on TV does not make it true?
No, not necessarily. You know, you have to watch. People should keep in mind, those are advertisements. They're there to sell a product. And, you know, you need to understand what is the best thing for you, not necessarily what is the most advertised product.
Right. They're trying to make money. They're not necessarily trying to make you better.
And, you know, they don't know you. They're
right.
Advertising to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of viewers.
Yes.
So, you know, what your concerns are really isn't of concern to them. They need to get the word out to as many people as possible, and you need to find what is the best thing for you.
Right. In a parallel study of over, 1,100 insomniacs, people with chronic sleep loss, 7% of the respondents who took a sleeping pill during the previous month reported bizarre and dangerous behavior. 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So 7 out of 100 people who are taking these drugs are having not just a little bit of side effect, but bizarre and dangerous behavior such as sleepwalking, sleep driving, and sleep eating. So we should be very, very wary of taking medications. And if you and your doctor feel that you really need that medication, that may be true. But don't walk into the doctor's office and say, I want to have a prescription for a sleep medication.
Exactly.
Really talk about what can we do short of that.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Gail. This has been great. Anything else you want to particularly leave with our listeners?
Just want to let everyone know that they can read all about this in Consumer Reports, the September edition, but they can also read it online at consumerreportshealth.org. And there's some other interesting things that are with the web story, including an interactive quiz to let you see how your sleep habits compare to those of the people we tested.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So let me summarize what we have talked about here. The first things to try if you're having trouble getting to sleep is, first of all, So there are a few first things to try. And when you first have trouble falling, almost everybody has trouble falling asleep in that hotel room. So let me start there. most American hotel rooms now are getting much better mattresses, I've noticed. So they're really focusing on this. But if you don't have a good mattress in the hotel room, see what you can do. Sometimes if you sleep the opposite way, you know, diagonally across the bed or crosswise on the bed, that can do it. Rearrange the blankets however you want to. You can take off that comforter. You can use the mattress pad even as a blanket if you want to. Don't be shy. The maid won't care. She'll just wonder about you, but that's all right. You'll never meet her again. Just go ahead and reorganize that bed however you want. Also, the air conditioning and the fans with the air conditioning may be a problem. In your own house, you have the same kinds of comfort issues. Really think about, do we need that mattress? If you and your partner are very different weights, you might consider getting one of those mattresses where each of you can adjust the comfort level on the two sides of the bed separately so that you're not interfering with each other's sleep. So comfort is a big one. Secondly, calm the mind. Do whatever you can to calm your mind. And this can include exercising during the day. Believe it or not, if you exercise during the day, you'll be more ready for sleep. You'll be a little bit more tired, but you'll also have those nice endorphins running around in your body, which are very calming. They soothe you in many different ways. So a little exercise during the day, but not within 2 hours of bedtime, would be very much to the good. Other things that can calm you, think about something that will engage your mind in a calming exercise. It could be music. It could be some sort of waves, some recording of the sea or some noise like that that will be soothing to you. And some of these sound machines that they review in Consumers Report here will do that kind of thing. They have ones that do sound or wind or different kinds of white noise, it's always called, that sort of masks other environmental noises. It just kind of neutralizes the noises in your environment. So some sort of a white noise machine might be useful, and they have reviews of several of these machines in the Consumers Report. Other things that I've tried are tapes. I mentioned guitar music or Baroque music because they're soothing, repetitive, and they don't go to the very high volume levels. They tend to be good, or anything that pleases you for all that, and put it on and at a volume level that won't disturb your sleep but will try to soothe you. But that kind of thing that gives your mind something to focus on that's other than that problem that it's just chewing on, that's what you want to do, is try to get your mind to let go of that problem. And in fact, it'll move to your subconscious mind. During sleep, we actually do a good bit of problem solving, but we do it at the subconscious level, not at the conscious level. So that's why you want something to disengage your mind. Another thing is read something, a light novel, not a serious nonfiction book. But this is the time for a light novel, something that's going to just grab your imagination and get your mind to focus on the story and not on the problem that you're trying to solve. Naps during the day are fine if you want to take them, but not after 3 p.m. And of course, the best thing to do is to get yourself into a routine. Say, I'm going to get up at a certain time, I'm going to go to bed at a certain time. I've noticed that even variances of 1 hour or 2 hours can be a problem. I was in a pattern of getting up at 6:30 on Mondays, but 7:30 most days, and on the weekend I get up at 8:30, and then on Monday I go back to 6:30. And I've actually found that I do better if I get up at 6:30 every day of the week. And on the weekends, I just give myself a nice long breakfast in the sunshine or do something like that. But give myself that early morning time, even as private time on days that I don't really need it for working purposes. But to stay on that schedule keeps my body more ready for sleep at the same time of night. So I go to bed at 10:30 or 11. I get up at 6:30, And that seems to work for me. So whatever pattern works for you, that's right. Tell your friends not to call you at midnight or simply turn off the ringer. And you know that cell phone? Don't charge it in your bedroom. Charge it in another room. I've noticed that especially on my BlackBerry, when a message comes in, it just vibrates a little bit. And that's enough to grab my attention because I'm used to paying attention to it all during the day. And just that slight little buzz that I hear from it in another part of the room is enough to keep me from going to sleep. So take all those little noisemakers and little flashing light things and take them out of the room and make your bedroom about sleep. And also, you know, about sex, but it should be about bed-related things. It should not be about television. It should not be about your computer. It should not be about your cell phone. It should be about sleep. And I think if you get into that kind of a routine, you'll find that it goes a very long way toward helping you sleep. And I should also mention that there are some nutritional elements that can help you with sleep. Some vitamin shortages will cause you to be more wakeful, and there are some supplements that can be used, especially if you're trying to wean off medication. David Sandoval, that we had spoken with a few weeks back, has a good plan about sleep. Then I'll put the pointer into the handout that goes with this. But there are a number of other people who will recommend some vitamin supplement thing to help with sleep. But his is one of the nicer ones that I've seen that is not so convoluted, is easy to implement, and might be helpful to you, especially, as I say, if you're trying to come down off some medication. But especially if you're on some mood-altering drug, some of those what they call the psychotropic drugs, do not stop that medication by yourself. You need to talk with your doctor about weaning yourself off of it in a controlled manner so that you do it well. Some of them can be pretty dangerous if you just stop taking them. So be sure to talk with your doctor about weaning yourself off of any of those and weaning yourself off sleep medications too, especially if you've been on it for a long time. You need to discuss your plan with your doctor and make sure that it's going to be good for your health. If anybody's interested in my jet lag tips, I'll be glad to share them with you. Just send me an email to questions@powerfulpatient.org, and I'll send you my tips about jet lag. Probably the craziest trip I ever took. I'll just share this little war story with you. I had to go to Dusseldorf, Germany, to be with a client from 9 to 5 in the business day in Germany. And I had something to do before I left, so I couldn't leave until Thursday afternoon. So I left Thursday afternoon out of New York. I flew to Dusseldorf, got there at 7 o'clock in the morning, had to be at the client's at 9, and then I had to be with the salesperson all day and do client calls all day long. So when they first proposed this to me, I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll do it on three conditions. One is that you fly me business class because I'm really going to have to lie down and get as much sleep as possible in the airplane. And the maximum amount of sleep you can get on an airplane on a trip like that is about 4 hours. You skip dinner, you lie down, you sleep. The second condition was when I get to Germany, I need a hotel room waiting for me, even though I'll only be in it for 2 hours, because I need to have a shower before I go to the client, and that helps to wake me up. So, and then the third condition was that after lunch, you plan into my schedule a half-hour meditation break. So I did it with those. That's like a nap. It's like a power nap. You can meditate for 20 minutes, and it's as good as a two-hour nap. So those were my three conditions, and that's the way I survived my one-day trip to Germany. And I actually did do it, and it wasn't so bad, and I flew back to the States on Saturday. So, but I don't recommend that as a regular affair, but it is possible to do that. You do need to make some special provisions for yourself, like the conditions that I put on the team. But you can do it, and you can do it successfully. So anyway, write to me if you want to know more about jet lag. And next week we will talk about nutrition. So I'll be back next week with another interesting interview, and I hope you'll be with me too. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Thank you so much.